Welcome to the Let Me Explain podcast. Throughout this election campaign, we are going through the parties and their manifestos and their chances, and we're also interviewing the party leaders. And today, it's Fianna Fáil's Micheál Martin. Let Me Explain.
Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening. And today we are in County Clare. We are in Tulla GAA Club in a back room with a bit of a party going on behind us because the Taoiseach is in town to canvass through Clare where you're hoping to pick up an extra seat. Taoiseach Micheál Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely. And I think it just really illustrates the beauty of a general election campaign that we're doing this interview in a room within the Tulla GAA Club premises. Senator Timmy Dooley has brought us here. His daughter was on the victorious Intermediate Camogie winning team, and we saw the Junior B Championship as well, and it illustrates the importance of community in rural Ireland, the centrality of sport in rural Ireland, and that's something that Fianna Fáil is very anxious through the Sports Capital Programme and through investment in rural Ireland more generally to sustain and enhance in the years to come.
And specifically, I think we're actually in the physio room. I was trying to get you to lie down on the physio chair for me to confess your psychiatric chair. You wouldn't do it.
Absolutely. This is the physio room, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I think so.
It's probably multi-purpose.
Yeah. Well, as a lot of things are in rural GAA clubs.
It's a fine facility here. I mean, the pitch is really impressive. I know they've received 150,000 funding from Sports Capital to help them towards an all-weather indoor pitch, which is essential in the modern era, particularly in terms of hurling, to get you through the whole 12 months of the year.
Yeah. So this is your fourth election as leader. How many general elections have you contested at this stage?
This will be my 11th general election, I think, beginning in 1987, which I lost. And then, do you want to go through them all? 87, 92, 97, 2002, 2007, 2011, 2016, 2020, now 2024. First three actually within 5 years. So that might give you a clue as to why I always prefer terms of government that go the full term.
It was burned into you early. Does it get easier? Do you learn more as you go on? Like, are you a more relaxed candidate and campaigner this time?
I am a more relaxed candidate, definitely, compared to the fanaticism of your early years. But, you know, everything evolves in life. You build up a base in your own constituency. It's different as well because the last three campaigns, essentially 2020, 2016 and 2011, where I was party leader, which means I don't get to canvass in my own constituency. So my wife Mary and the three kids are of an age where they're leading the charge with friends and family, brothers and so on, sisters, who are out there canvassing and campaigning.
And you are in a very rural constituency here in Clare, one where you are very much hoping and pushing to pick up a second seat. What kind of stuff is coming up in rural Ireland? Like, I'm hearing a lot about crime, housing, infrastructure. Are they the big ones that you think when we get out of the cities, maybe where the main bulk of the media coverage is, that's where this election will be decided?
Yes, I think we are hoping for two seats there. We have three very strong candidates, Rita McInerney, Cathal Crowe, O'Gwaine TD, and of course Senator Timmy Dooley, all three well known in their specific areas. It will be competitive. It's a very fragmented system, as we know. A lot of candidates, but I think we have a very good chance here. We did exceptionally well in the local elections here in Clare. The issues are varied as you go across the country. Certainly housing is always there across the board. We do need to build more houses over and above what we have built. We do need, also crime is an issue. I was just came from Six Mile Bridge. We were kind of grow there, and a gentleman at the bar just said to me, I had my windows broken in last week, and he was complaining that there was no Gardaí in the Garda station there, and it manifests itself in different areas across the country. Public transport is another. Just met a man outside whose daughter is in UCC and saying, can any chance you get a bus service from UCC to the train station in Cork? So, you know, it's interesting, like from Fingal to South Kerry, public transport is manifesting itself in different ways. In Eden, Derry and Offaly, for example, we met six bus drivers and their complaint was that they needed more bus drivers to help them with the school transport system. So that's an issue that perhaps doesn't feature as much in the polling or the research that people are doing, but is manifesting itself in different locations in different ways.
Yeah. Let's pick up on the crime issue, because it's been one that's been maybe a flashpoint over the last couple of days. Do you agree with your party colleague, Willie O'Dea, that Helen McEntee has been the worst justice minister in the history of the state?
No, and I don't think we should get into personalities at all. I think it's a broader issue. This campaign should be fought on policy. The programme for government will determine what happens over the next 5 years. What Fianna Fáil has come forward with is a very substantive piece of policy, probably the most radical departure, the idea of creating a new Department of Domestic Affairs, which would deal with national security, the border management, would deal with migration in its totality, and cyber security, all within one department. And then your Department of Justice would concentrate on more Gardaí, and we believe we need at least another 5,000 over the next 5 years, criminal justice system, prisons, and law reform. And that, I think, would, from a policy perspective and a structural perspective, would enable us to come to grips with the issue of people feeling unsafe in towns and cities across the country. Whether we agree or disagree is not the point. Perception is important. People do not feel safe to the degree that they did a decade ago. Let's be straight about it. That's what we're picking up. And I just picked that up half an hour ago in a pub in Six Mile Bridge. You'll hear it from young women in terms of going out at night. They're not feeling as secure. And that's not just Gardaí, and it's not just a justice issue. It's a societal issue. It does speak to the need to invest in towns and villages in the public realm. It means more residential, and that's why Fianna Fáil is putting forward the idea of a 100,000 above the shop refurbishment grant to facilitate residential living. Because if we get more people living on the streets in our towns, that in itself becomes its own security and helps to create a kind of a deterrent to crime, but also enhances the sense of security in towns and villages.
And so is it unhelpful for you, who's trying to get all those messages across, but also as a party leader who will likely have to deal with Fine Gael after this election, that you see those kind of attacks from Willie O'Dea? Also Jim O'Callaghan, who was very critical of Helen McEntee.
Well, Jim was more on policy, to be fair. I don't think Jim was particularly personal law. I mean,
you do hear from a good few Fianna Fáil TDs, though.
Well, no, I think look, I don't want to go tit for tat, but Fine Gael, I think, irked a lot of people in Fianna Fáil with their very studied. If you go through the press releases the first week, about six of them were directed against Fianna Fáil. I made the point in the Independent podcast that it felt to us as if Fine Gael were targeting Fianna Fáil more than Sinn Féin. And that has created a response, but I mean, fundamentally, I'm focusing on the big divide in this election. The big divide is between Sinn Féin and us, and as far as I'm concerned, Fianna Fáil's position as a pro-enterprise, pro-European party, and also with a defined housing policy, we're very different to what the Sinn Féin offering is. And Sinn Féin would crucify first-time buyers, and it's interesting in their own releases and so on, they bury that fact that they would get rid of the Help to Buy scheme, they would get rid of the First Home Bridge the Gap scheme, and that would crucify first-time buyers, and also then they would undermine the Land Development Agency. Now, having been in government for the last 4.5 years, it took us 2 years to legislate for the Land Development Agency. It had been talked about for years before that, but we gave it specific powers. But it was complex. And we had to cover European state aid and all that kind of issue and go to the Commission to get all of that right. I know Sinn Féin want to start all of that again. And I'm saying, look, the Land Development Agency can do 14,000 houses. We know that's what they have within their remit. We believe they can do 25,000 to 2030 if we give them enough capital. We've given them 1.2 billion in the budget. We're earmarking a further 4 billion to capitalise them fully to enable them to get up to 25,000 houses built. Now, why would you go back and do all of that? And that's what Sinn Féin are proposing, which means more delay, disruption.
Yeah. When it comes to housing, on a very fundamental level, do you want to see house prices fall?
I would like to see house prices fall for young people, but I'm a realist in terms of where the markets go. And as long as supply is as restrained as it is, I can't see it in the immediate future. But I think if we get to 60,000 houses per annum being built in this country, and we're some years off that yet, I think we can begin to see prices moderate and wage income then catch up to enable people to be in a much more affordable position to buy a house or to rent a house.
Yeah,
and I think the development of cost rental, for example, is giving us a model. And Dara Byrne was the first to do that in the end of the day. It gives us a model where rents can be 25% below the market. But again, location and supply is becoming a problem to achieve that.
But just because on the point of it, a lot of the policies that your government has brought in would seem to just be trying to bridge the gap for people as opposed to actually bringing houses down, and that there will be a subsidy needed from the government to try and own your home for the considerable future for a lot of people.
There will be, and because governments can't run markets, or, you know, but what governments can do is intervene in a situation where there's been market failure, and there, without question, has been market failure. And then we saw from the Owen Murphy interview in his book, which I have, how in many ways that intervention didn't happen early enough, maybe to the degree that it's happened in the last 4.5 years, where we, from the very beginning of this government, we took about a scruff of the neck. The cabinet subcommittee, I chaired it, five government departments were given each a different strand of housing for all to implement: finance, public expenditure, higher education, housing. It needs that consistently over the next 5 years. It needs to be the social priority of the next government as much as it was of this government.
So how many years away do you think we are from house prices realistically moderating or falling?
I think we're within, certainly if we get up to 40,000 next year, I think in the next year or two we should see moderation in house prices.
The other big issue that we're seeing in the polls is cost of living. And a lot of people would say when they're looking at their budget that if you were back in government or whoever was in government and the one-off payments stopped next year, are they actually better off than they were before? So what would Fianna Fáil do on housing that is beyond the one-off?
Well, of course, what we would do is, energy is the big one. We would change the legislation that governs the regulation of energy prices. And it's a big item in our manifesto, which probably hasn't got the attention it deserves. Because we are saying that the CRU currently doesn't have a consumer focus. We're also saying that there will be massive investment in the grid in years to come, but that can't all fall on the user. The government will have to subsidise that investment substantially. Now, the Apple money gives us an opportunity to do that in terms of investment in expanding the grid and so on. And that would give us a more sustainable energy price, electricity price into the future. So we have good proposals there that would give you a sustained structural change that will give you a sustained reduction in energy prices, because we're too high in Europe. In addition to that, we've already commenced over the last number of years sustained reduction in the cost of public services, eliminated hospital charges, for example, brought the drug payment threshold down to 80. We want to bring it down to 40 now over the next number of years. We've extended GP free cards. We'll do so. We want to do more up to 12 years of age. Just realistic, we think, given what we were able to achieve in the last 4 years. Free school books from first year to leaving certificate. No one thought that possible 5 years ago. We've done it. All that's reducing costs, right? Transport costs have come down in terms of school transport and so on. And also then, you know, issues like the leaving cert fees and all of that. I think that gives you a more sustainable approach than just the once-off cost of living packages, because they can continue on, in my view, because incomes will catch up as well. Incomes are now going to surpass inflation. We've had a couple of years where inflation surpassed income, or at least they're at one stage level peg, but at one early stage much higher, and so people really feel it, and that's why we brought in the cost of living package this budget, because people are feeling it, because the prices are still at an elevated level, even though the headline inflation was below 1% the last month.
But how many more years can they continue, or is it done? Was that last budget, in your view,
my view is that I would much prefer, and that's why in our fiscal pathway we've put in expenditure levels of 6 point odd, moderating out to 5.5 by the end of the decade, which is higher than the 5% rule that was there in the last 5 years, which we were not in a position to adhere to. So I think that's a more realistic current spend. And in fact, if you look at our manifesto, we haven't seen the Sinn Féin manifesto as we speak today. Fine Gael have published theirs, but ours is much higher provision for investment in public services than Fine Gael, for example. It's kind of interesting. In health in particular, we've allocated I think about $2.5 billion for about 25,000 extra healthcare staff. There's nothing in the Fine Gael manifesto for extra healthcare staff, which is kind of interesting, and maybe they'll endeavour to expand that. We've put in dedicated funding for public service pay. They haven't. So what you're beginning to see, and this is genuine substance as opposed to all the stuff we've been listening to in the last 10 days, which is kind of irritating. This is real substance now, you know, in terms of investment in public services, given the population growth. We'd invite people to analyse our manifesto. I think we have provided substantial funding for public services across education, health, childcare, social protection, higher levels than Fine Gael have. And we've also provided 20 billion for existing levels of service. So I think it's a very realistic fiscal programme we put forward based on the economic assumptions that the Department of Finance gave us. We haven't seen Sinn Féin's manifesto yet, which is quite extraordinary. They're having a national debate and their manifesto will not be published before the national debate.
Let's talk about your government colleagues for a while. Do you like the way that Simon Harris does politics?
How do you mean?
As in, you criticised Leo Varadkar a lot for spin ahead of the last election. I think when you were talking to Ivan Yates in the last election, you picked one word to describe him. It was spin. And a lot of people in your own party would argue Simon Harris is even spinnier.
I'm not going to get into personal... I think my own view is, I think there is... it's interesting, even in the tour of this election, we're quite different in terms of how we... You know, I spent the whole day in South Kerry yesterday, which was... I hope we'll reap a dividend in terms of an additional seat because we did very well there yesterday. In terms of presentation and so on like that, I do believe in greater focus on policy debate. I don't think we've had a policy debate yet. We will hopefully have it tomorrow evening and then a further one next week. I'm not going to comment personally on Simon Harris's approach to politics. I am disappointed with how this campaign started in terms of the silliness of some of it. Not from AFG headquarters, I just thought it was kind of ridiculous stuff, but anyway.
Oh, well, if you're loath to criticism, what's one thing that Simon Harris does better than you do?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think it's early days yet. One of the challenges in the last 6 months is, when Simon became leader, you're very much into an electoral cycle. Mm-hmm. Not to be to the credit of Fianna Fáil and my good self, we facilitated that. And one thing I've managed to contribute to Irish politics in the last 10 years is contribute to the government's lasting, as I did in the confidence supply earlier, even though we weren't in government and hurt us a lot electorally. But during Brexit, it was the right thing to do for the country. I think...
So one thing he does better than you?
I couldn't say. I think what I would like people to look at my time as Taoiseach, where I believe I had a very collegial approach and delegated a lot and gave ministers space and supported ministers and so on.
You're obviously hoping to be back at the Taoiseach's office
Yes. Pretty
quickly. When it comes to the face-off between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, obviously it's quite close. The polls and everything else would tell us that. There's a lot of last seats and fourth seats you'll be fighting for, one or the other. If that was all to swing in one particular direction, either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, what does the gap need to be before there's a discussion on not having a rotating Taoiseach?
I haven't worked that out at all. I think in my view, one good thing we did by having a rotating Taoiseach, we've created an option that's on the table for future governments and future coalitions, no matter what the composition of those future coalition governments will be. And it takes a bit of ego out of politics, and I was determined to go through with it. Many people thought I wouldn't be, when I give up Taoiseach, I'd move on or something. I said, no. It's important to say to people, look, I was Taoiseach for 2.5 years. I can now be tarnished in Minister of Foreign Affairs and Defence, because it's about policy. It's about issues. That's what it's about. A lot of European leaders were really intrigued by this, thought it wouldn't happen, kept asking me 2 or 3 months beforehand what's going to happen, as if somebody would pull a fast one or something like that. And I said, no, it's an agreement. Nothing like that going to happen. And that's a good thing. And I think transfers will matter hugely in this election. And I think there is a divide in Irish politics in terms around the economic model that we're pro-enterprise, as I said earlier. And I just get the feeling, not a feeling, I know, deep down a lot of the opposition, Sinn Féin, Sock Dems, far left, PVP, they don't really believe in it, and they're Eurosceptic. They don't believe in the European Union. They don't believe in trade agreements like the Canadian European Union trade deal, which added a lot of jobs to a lot of small to medium-sized companies. Hard to understand that logic. So that's the big divide in Irish politics, and the transfers along the centre are quite strong, are worse strong in the local elections, and I would like to see them follow through. Mm-hmm. And Fianna Fáil is one of the least toxic parties now, if you look at some of the transfer patterns at the local elections.
So just in relation to public funding for broadcasting and for radio, public sector broadcasting, a lot of the public sector broadcasters feel you had this big chance with RTE to reform it, and you didn't take the chance to go far enough and provide public sector broadcasting, and now we're seeing the consequences in the likes of Virgin Media axing 2 shows of The Tonight Show a week.
I think that's a problem. I would accept some criticism there. I would have preferred if more funding went to the local radios, national television, national radio, in respect of public service content. I think we did fight at the budget. We got an extra million, I think, in on top of what was already being provided. That's not at the scale that's required. We are seeing the manifestation of that in terms of Virgin's capacities. And also, it puts government and society in weaker position as well to demand higher standards and higher services if the funding isn't there. And I think we have to look at more innovative ways to fund state. Well, like we do some now through, in foreign affairs, for example, but it's separate, but there's a very good system there. It's nothing to do with politicians and their no influence on it, which is good. Not just good, it's essential. I would like some more niche funding for specific issues like that, because I get criticism. Yesterday in Killarney, it was said to me that our international coverage in Ireland isn't great. Mm. Generally speaking, in terms of world affairs, Middle East, and so on, you know, it's patchy as a country, if we're honest. A lot of people depend on BBC for a lot of that stuff, for more in-depth analysis. Like RT does its best, but it's World Report. It's a few journalists who are into it, but they don't even get they don't have the resources. Mm. Neither do News Talk or Today FM or Virgin, that kind of resource, to give a more to give a more comprehensive analysis of very complex issues. So that's a big gap. And so then outside of that, you know, there is funding now for court reporting and all of that, which is part of local democracy, but we could do much better, and I accept the criticism.
One of the big story in the newspapers today was in relation to John McGahan, one of the Fine Gael candidates, and photos of the man who was assaulted at the time. Do you think it is appropriate that Fine Gael is still running him as a candidate?
I think there's a real problem there, if I'm honest. I think the nature of the attack was quite... seems to me anyway to have been very aggressive, to say the least. The injuries are shocking, and I think people can see, unfortunately, online the nature of the attack, and whether he has learned since then and fully apologised. I think there are issues there, if I'm honest.
Should he be deselected as a candidate in Europe?
Look, it's a matter for Fine Gael in the end of the day. It's a matter for the people of Louth. It's not a good look at all in terms of we upholding certain values in society that something like that happened.
Would a Fianna Fáil candidate have done the same thing still be running?
I think the victims doesn't appear, and he is a victim, notwithstanding court cases and all the rest of it. I mean, you can see from the civil case he did receive some awards, but he clearly, from the wounds he has and so on, was a victim at the time, and those attacks can have an impact on people. John McGahan may have explanations for it, but it clearly wasn't a scuffle, and you know, there was, people had to pull him off literally. In my view, it does raise very serious questions. Ultimately, the people of Louth will decide on it.
Would a Fianna Fáil candidate who'd done the same thing still be a candidate?
I'm not so sure, if I'm honest, that they would. And it certainly is a matter that the party would have considered.
And just to very finally then, because I know you're on the move here, your count day when you get into it, stressful time. I know you're still polling on actual polling day and you're out last minute. What do you do on count day itself before you get to the count centre? Do you have a routine, to relax you?
I have a good rest. I don't panic and punk. I'm very relaxed on count day. I don't want to hear anything. You know, the kids annoy me now lately, in a couple of years' time. Last couple of years, they're so alert. They're making phone calls. I said, I don't want to hear anything, at least until about 11 o'clock in the morning. No point. Mary, of course, would be up listening to 96 FM and Red FM with the Cork count and so on like that, because Mary's counting morning, noon and night, in fairness to Mary. But I'm not a bit like that. I just don't want to hear, because I find all that stuff, even the numbers game, I'm not into it as much. The result's going to happen. The result's going to be what it is. I do get into the transfer and then calculating, you know, where the third, fourth, fifth seat could go. So I just want peace. I don't want anyone bothering me up to about 11 o'clock. And I just have a very good breakfast that I'm not getting at the moment to the same extent.
And you say a very good breakfast. People are picturing a fry now, but I don't think a fry is your style.
No, it'll be a banana, an apple, an orange. It'll be porridge with a bit of natural honey, cinnamon, and flaxseed on that. And then I'll have a boiled egg with a good bit of brown bread and a pot of green tea. And that will be heaven.
on County, and then I go out and breathe in a bit of fresh air, take a walk, and then arrive in at some stage, maybe midday into the count or 1 o'clock when the tally is done. Mm. I'll go into the count. I like the count, but I don't like hanging around the count too long, but I like meeting different people, different parties. Mihal Eno does helps out with the tally. With other parties, he'll be organising that for the whole lot, like really for the other parties as well. Killian's very good on the numbers, and Killian, I'd say, will be trying to predict, as he did in the local elections. He'll be going through the country for me. He sent me a great paper there about a month ago, Battleground States. Obviously, he was influenced by the American. So I expect a lot of told you so's.
Yeah.
On Saturday and Sunday. From him, anyway.
And everyone else, probably, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Very finally, tell us something no one knows about Micheál Martin.
Well, I suppose, now that we're doing an interview here, I used to, broadcasting at very early stages as a 12-year-old. In Skullcrease with Tom Landis, my teacher. He was a very innovative teacher, and I used to do radio programs around the world in 15 minutes, around Europe in 15 minutes with a classmate of mine, Pat Walsh. I often think it helped me, I'd like to think it helped me in terms of articulation and doing interviews later on in life. And my twin brother at the same time, because of that teacher, was making radio, the crystal sets.
Right.
And he'd have wires hanging out the bedroom window, because we were in the same bedroom in Turner's Cross. And I always remember his crystals that worked, whatever, earth thing and all that. And Radio Luxembourg came in over, and we were just thrilled. But that's the brilliance of a good teacher, to do things outside the box. It wasn't on any exam. It didn't help us get into second level in terms of the entrance exams we had to do at the time, but it broadened our minds enormously.
Yeah. Please tell me you still have those tapes somewhere.
I don't know. I don't. Oh. That's a good point, actually. I don't.
I have to move those out of the attic somewhere now.
Yeah.
Micheál Martin, thank you so much for sitting down with the Let Me Explain podcast. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the campaign.
Thank you very much. Thanks.